This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, April 1st, 2021, on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Ahead today, marking the anniversary of a pandemic and remembering those lost to COVID-19 with natural monuments, oak seedlings. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth has the story. And we mark a second year of Sound Perimeter segments with Leah Uribe, musician, educator, podcaster, and a guide to a world of music every Thursday on our show. We'll have a conversation with her in the second half hour of our show today. After Ozarks, on Here and Now, musician and historian Julian Saporiti uses music to tell difficult stories like the Japanese internment, the Vietnam War, and the plight of immigrants today. We'll meet him and hear some of his work, plus receive an update on all the latest news on Here and Now, beginning at 1. Arkansas lawmakers are advancing a bill putting restrictions on absentee voting in the state. Members of the House State Agencies and Governmental Affairs Committee yesterday approved House Bill 1715 by Republican Representative Mark Lowry of Maumelle. He says the bill would lower the number of absentee ballot applications a person could obtain without opening them up to allegations of voter fraud.
Current law allows for possession of 10 ballots to create a rebuttable presumption of intent to defraud. So the law changes that from 10 to 4. In other words, that an individual can't just walk out with 10 applications at a time and then try and find people who would want to vote absentee.
The bill would also prohibit county clerks from sending unsolicited applications for absentee ballots to registered voters or from displaying a printable application online. It also requires the signature on an absentee ballot application to match the signature on a person's original voter registration. Democratic Representative Fred Love of Little Rock voted against the bill. He says it doesn't seek to fix any actual issues.
You might have one or two instances where there's irregularities, but there's been irregularities in all elections. These laws don't change anything except you're trying to suppress the vote. And that's the voter suppression puzzle that you're trying to put together.
The bill now goes to the full House for a vote. Arkansas's Department of Health is reporting 212 new cases of COVID-19 in the most recent 24-hour testing period. 10 additional deaths were also reported. Hospitalizations and active cases in Arkansas both dropped since this time yesterday by 4 patients and 22 cases, respectively. Benton County reported the most new cases yesterday, 34. Washington County had the third most new cases, 16. Bentonville resident Jeremy Wilson is being appointed to the University of Arkansas Board of Trustees. He replaces outgoing trustee John Goodson. Wilson's term will last through February 2031. He is the founder of Now Diagnostics and a co-founder of one of the state's largest private equity firms, New Road Capital Partners. He is a graduate of the University of Arkansas's Walton College of Business. Former Fayetteville High School Bulldog basketball player Sasha Goforth will be playing basketball for the University of Arkansas next season. Goforth is transferring from Oregon State, where she was named an All-Pac-12 freshman this season. Clear tonight, lows around freezing in northwest Arkansas, mid-30s for the Arkansas River Valley. More sunshine tomorrow with highs from 62 to 66. A few clouds forecast for Friday night with lows in the lower 40s. This is Ozarks at Large. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday afternoon. In just a couple of minutes on our show, a bill to ban transgender minors from receiving gender-affirming medical care has been approved by the Arkansas legislature this week. We'll learn more from Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich just ahead. News from the legislature, news about music, news about the virus on this hour of Ozarks at Large, a sample of what you can hear every day on this program produced at the Carver Center for Public Radio with your support. Ozarks at Large is a rarity in the public world. Not many radio stations devote the resources and time and personnel hours that we do to covering the culture, the news, arts of where a station is. But we are committed to doing this. We've done it on a daily basis for nearly 11 years now, and we continue to do it with your help, your financial help. Because you listen to KUAF, because you appreciate the international, national, regional, state, and local news on this station, it's imperative that you contribute to KUAF. You can do so at supportkuaf.com. This is a listener-supported station. The vast majority of our budget that allows us to bring you the programs you rely on and tell you the information you expect from us every day, the vast majority of that budget comes from you and listeners just like you. And since we're close to the end of this five-day spring fundraiser, Lynn and Joel Carver of Springdale, great friends and great supporters of KUAF, are making an Ozarks at Large specific challenge of $1,000 right now. And we would love to hear from you so you can help us meet that $1,000 challenge. We're going to try to meet it by the end of Ozarks at Large on this Thursday. To do that, we need you to step up and go to supportkuaf.com. It's simple. You choose the amount. You choose the method. You can become a sustaining member by going to supportkuaf.com. Pick a specific amount of money that you would like to contribute every month. And over the course of 12 months, that becomes a pretty significant contribution. Supportkuaf.com. Thanks to Lynn and Joel Carver of Springdale for continuing to support KUAF and Ozarks at Large. Let's meet that $1,000 challenge during this hour of Ozarks at Large. A proposed law to ban transgender minors from receiving gender-affirming health care and penalizing medical providers who attempt to deliver it was approved this week by the Arkansas legislature. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich tells us more.
Dr. Stephanie Ho is a primary care physician who operates Vector Health and Wellness in Fayetteville. Treating transgender patients age 12 and older is a routine part of her practice.
We see minors and adults for gender-affirming care.
Currently, she's seeing 20 trans youth. Parents must be present during clinical intake and treatment, and along with patients, provide informed consent.
Basically, gathering of sensitive information and then also an opportunity to talk to me without parents. So that way, if they have any concerns that they're not comfortable, you know, talking about in front of their parents, then we do that.
Transgender, or trans for short, describes people whose gender identity is different from the one assigned to them at birth. Trans people's gender expression may begin to change at a very young age. A little boy may express feminine ways, for example, or a little girl masculine behavior. Trans minors seeking gender-affirming medical help may be given certain medications, again, with their consent and parental consent.
For minors of a certain age, we know that not all of them would be appropriate to start actual hormones, so estrogen or testosterone. Some of them are still on the younger side where they would benefit from puberty blockers. Our clinic does not currently provide that because the recommendations say that puberty blockers should be prescribed in conjunction with a pediatric endocrinologist.
Dr. Ho refers patients to a pediatric endocrinologist at Arkansas Children's Hospital Gender Spectrum Clinic. Puberty blockers slow down physical development prior to receiving female or male hormone therapy to match their gender expression.
We're helping them not go through the wrong puberty, if that makes sense, because we see a lot of, you know, trans, feminine youth who, they don't want to develop, the characteristics that we see for, cisgender males as puberty goes on in terms of body hair, voice changes, those type of things. And for trans men or trans male youth, the puberty blockers will help with, suppressing menstruation.
As they mature, trans youth then receive hormone therapy to support their gender expression. So for trans girls,
estrogen therapy. We also talk to them about androgen blockers. And so basically medicines that we would use to block the testosterone that the body produces. For trans males, we talk to them about using testosterone therapy. Whenever they become 16 or older. And of course, this is always done, with the consent and, with in conjunction, knowing that their parent is there supporting them and understands kind of everything that we're doing at any one time.
Dr. Ho says gender reassignment surgery is not practiced on trans youth because their bodies are still maturing.
You know, I have never met a trans minor or adult who has not done just extensive research. So I don't have usually a whole lot of questions from the minors or from the kids, just because, I mean, they have educated themselves thoroughly before even, you know, a lot of times even talking to their parents.
Trans youth who are statistically more victimized at home or school have a higher rate of suicide, so are screened, Dr. Ho says, and offered confidential psychological help.
Cast up the ballot. 28 yeas, 7 nays. The bill is passed.
But this week, House Bill 1570, titled Save Adolescents from Experimentation, or SAFE Act, was approved by the state legislature to prohibit trans-affirming medical care in Arkansas, the first state to ban it. Before the vote, State Senator Jason Rapert, Republican Conway, accused trans-affirming medical providers of preying on children.
To change the sex of anybody, it's impossible. You can create a masculinized female or a feminized male, but it's impossible. And you know, I do feel for these kids. And you know the reason probably why the suicide rates are as high as they are amongst these children? It's because they're not getting help and they're staying confused. If they would have somebody that would mentor for them the reality of the fact that, except for a very, very, very small percentage of people, your sex is determined when you're born.
And Senator Missy Irvin, Republican Mountain View, offered misleading testimony that children in Arkansas are being surgically mutilated.
And there are human rights organizations in the world that see that as a human rights violation to actually mutilate female genitalia and female circumcision.
Female circumcision, an ancient African tribal practice, is outlawed. Senator Clark Tucker, Democrat from Little Rock, who supports trans-affirming treatment in Arkansas, issued a warning to colleagues before the vote.
And that is that bills like this have already been struck down in courts for violating the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution and for violating the prohibition of discrimination on the basis of sex in both Title VII of the Federal Civil Rights Act and the Affordable Care Act. So I think we're walking down a path that will create litigation that Arkansas will be on the losing side of.
Passage of the SAFE Act is attracting national condemnation. Lee Savio Beers, MD, president of the American Academy of Pediatrics, spoke against it during a national press conference hosted by the Human Rights Campaign.
Representing 67,000 pediatricians and, as always, advocating for all children. This bill is harmful in two ways. One, it threatens the health and well-being of transgender youth. And two, it puts politicians rather than pediatricians in charge of a child's medical care. Let me first explain how the bill harms transgender children's health. Even before the pandemic, which has had staggering effects on children's mental health, transgender youth had statistically higher rates of depression and suicidal ideation. Around half of transgender youth consider suicide and a third attempt it. The AAP recommends that youth who identify as transgender have access to comprehensive, gender-affirming, and developmentally appropriate health care provided in a safe and inclusive clinical space.
Rumba Yambu, director of Arkansas Transitive, directly addressed Arkansas trans youth who were following this news.
Know that it is a fact. It's a fact that you were born blessed. Being trans is a blessing. And it's a blessing that scares people who are born without it. Please don't give up.
Dr. Stephanie Ho says she will be able to continue to treat trans youth, but only as a family practitioner. But the law will bar gender spectrum trained clinicians from practicing trans youth medicine in Arkansas. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Stories you hear on Ozarks at Large are shareable with friends. Just go to ozarksatlarge.com and look for the appropriate links.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
This is 91.3 KUAF, because you understand that a public radio station can bring you the news from all around the world, from across the country, and from where you live. We know you know the importance of contributing financially to your public radio station. The money you contribute makes it possible for us to give you Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Fresh Air, and Ozarks at Large. It helps pay for batteries, for microphones, for computers, for people to be able to go out and report from Fort Smith and Little Rock and Fayetteville and wherever else the news is happening. We know you appreciate the worldwide scope of news you hear on KUAF and the regional scope you hear on Ozarks at Large. We also know that you know it's incredibly important that we hear from you with your financial support so we can continue to be a strong, independent radio station. You can make the support right now in the amount of your choosing at supportkuaf.com. And Lynn and Joel Carver, great friends of Ozarks at Large and KUAF, have made a $1,000 Ozarks at Large challenge today. So you're not on the hook for all 1,000, of course, but when you contribute and other listeners just like you contribute to support the station that you rely on, and over the course of Ozarks at Large on this Thursday, we reach $1,000. That will actually be worth $2,000 to the radio station. It's the next and last day of this 5-day fundraiser. It's getting time for you to make a contribution. You can go right now to supportkuaf.com, and thank you.
91.3 KUAF is supported by Dunder Mifflin. Dunder Mifflin, limitless paper for a paperless world. Located next to Vance Refrigeration. Additional support provided by the Unity Festival. This year's festival includes a reunion of the band Land Ho, a rare outdoor performance by Duke Silver, and the 5,000 Candles tribute to Little Sebastian.
This is Ozarks at Large. Thanks for spending part of your April 1st with us. To mark the anniversary of the coronavirus in Arkansas last month, the Arkansas Department of Agriculture donated 10,000 oak tree seedlings to the families and friends of those lost to COVID-19. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth explains how the project came to fruition.
Late last year, Joe Fox, director of the Arkansas Department of Agriculture's Forestry Division, says his department got a call from the state's epidemiologist, Dr. Jennifer Dillahay. She wanted to find a way to mark a full year of the pandemic in Arkansas and memorialize the more than 5,000 people who have died from the disease.
So the COVID-19 Memorial Seedling Project was conceived by a support group that Dr. Jennifer Dillahay attends, and it's a support group for families of COVID-19 victims led by a pastor whose church had been hit rather hard with COVID-19. And had a few of that congregation had passed away, to go to a Bible verse, actually, in Isaiah, that calls for, that talks about mourning and talks about recovering from mourning. And one of the phrases said, and plant oaks of renewal.
So that's what Fox and the Forestry Division set out to do. Every year, the state grows over 8 million tree seedlings, mostly hardwoods, at the Bauckham Nursery in North Little Rock, to sell. But now, they've set aside about 10,000 of those nut-all oak trees for this memorial.
These are bare root seedlings that were grown at our Bauckham Nursery in North Little Rock. We're very proud of our nursery. So we had plenty of nut-all seedlings unsold, and made seedlings available from, I think it was March 11th.
And he says thousands of those seedlings are still available now at 13 locations across the state for anyone affected by COVID-19.
We're happy to distribute seedlings. We would request, someone does not need to come looking for 200 seedlings, but if you want one or two, that sort of thing, we're happy to do that. All one has to do is to call our local office and they can arrange a pickup time for the seedlings. We have them available at the Bauckham Nursery in North Little Rock, but Fayetteville on Garland Avenue in Clarksville, Greenbrier, Ash Flat, Jonesboro, Far City, Monticello, Malvern, El Dorado, Stamps, Dirks, and also we've got a few in Paris at our office in Logan County at Paris.
And Fox says inexperienced arborists shouldn't worry. The Department of Agriculture offers assistance and best practices for planting their memorial seedlings.
And nut all oak is a grand tree discovered or named by Thomas Nuttall, one of the early explorers of Arkansas. And it grows pretty much all over the state in bottomland situations near creeks and streams or on the hills. It's a very hardy tree, so we're hoping for good luck with these seedlings as they're planted. And now, right now in March, is toward the end of the planting season. We think of April the 15th as being just about the time that you want to end planting when the trees are fully leafed out. We plant them in the dormant season. So we do have a one-pager of how to plant your bare root tree that we give out with these seedlings.
And Fox says families across the state not only lost loved ones to the pandemic, but many missed the chance to celebrate the lives of those who died. And he says planting a tree is one way to keep their memory alive.
To plant a tree, and especially an oak tree, that is gorgeous in the spring, gorgeous in the fall. It helps clean our air. It protects our water. All those good things, provides shade, and just is gorgeous. The aesthetics are wonderful. Nuttall's a great representative of all the good things that trees do for us as humans. It's a grand way to remember our loved ones.
Those interested can schedule an appointment to pick up seedlings in their area through the Forestry Division website at agriculture.arkansas.gov. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Daniel Carruth.
And the Oklahoma State Department of Health continues to catalog an increase in positive tests as this week continues. Today's report includes 413 new cases of COVID-19 in Oklahoma. That's after 309 new cases yesterday and 121 new cases reported on Tuesday. There were 25 newly added deaths from the virus in today's Oklahoma report. Ahead on Ozarks, sharing a larger world of music, Leah Uribe, the host of our Sound Perimeter segments, talks to us about her inspiration for the series and about looking forward to performing in front of an audience again soon. That's in about 15 minutes on Ozarks at Large. City of Bella Vista will give away free trees next week. 200 trees and shrubs will be given to residents of the city on Friday, April 9th, in the parking lot of the Bella Vista Community Development Center, beginning at 8 that day, lasting until noon or until all of the plants are spoken for. The giveaway will be a drive-through event. The trees are provided through a grant from the Walton Family Foundation as part of a larger effort to increase and diversify the region's tree canopy. And after an extended quiet period because of, well, you know, Lake Dardanelle State Park is hosting events celebrating the outdoor world while observing COVID-19 protocols. Tomorrow night, there will be a quiz show, Know Your State, at the State Parks Amphitheater beginning at 6. Saturday, there are events at the park scheduled from 9 a.m. through 7 p.m. and still more on Sunday. You can find details at arkansasstateparks.com.
91.3 KUAF, supported by Acme. Acme, delivering anvils, dynamite, and roadrunner traps in the blink of an eye. Additional support is provided by Rose Apothecary, lotions, soaps, and occasional performances by the Jazzagals, located near Cafe Tropical and the Rosebud Motel.
Quick reminder, this is the penultimate day of KUAF's spring fundraiser for 2021. If you appreciate the fact that KUAF has a deep commitment to the news, culture, music, and voices of where you live, please remember, we keep that deep commitment strong and independent with your financial support. We do have a challenge, another challenge specific to Ozarks at Large for this Thursday. Joel and Lynn Carver of Springdale are putting up $1,000. If we can collectively put together $1,000 worth of contributions during Ozarks at Large on Thursday, they'll match it. It'll be worth $2,000 to your public radio station. Select the amount that works for you, perhaps become a sustaining member and give a specific amount for 12 months of a year, and then go to supportkuaf.com and make that important contribution, and thank you.
Welcome to the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. On the program today, we will hear from Rex Nelson, who is a senior editor of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. to discuss happenings at the state capitol as the 93rd General Assembly rolls along, headed toward completing its third full month in regular session. We begin, though, with news from Walmart, and to no great surprise, the company says its annual shareholders meeting will again be a virtual meeting this year due to COVID-19. The business portion of the meeting is scheduled Wednesday, June 2nd, with the live audio webcast starting at 10:30 a.m. Walmart said it will also hold a virtual event Friday, June 4th, for employees that will have entertainment and messages from the company's senior leadership. Walmart followed a similar program in 2020 amid the pandemic, with virtual-only events, and it curtailed all corporate travel outside of its own jet service. That story is on our website, and you can read more at nwabusinessjournal.com. When we come back, a visit with Arkansas Democrat Gazette senior editor Rex Nelson on today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. ArkansasStateChamber.com. Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield. For more than 70 years, Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield has used its knowledge and compassion to create healthcare solutions for individuals and businesses. More information at ArkansasBlueCross.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. First Security, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
The 93rd Arkansas General Assembly was gaveled into session on Monday, January 11th. Nearly 3 months later, as with any legislative session, there have been wins and losses, good and bad. And that's where we start the conversation with Rex Nelson. He's the senior editor of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. He spoke with Roby Brock on a recent episode of Talk Business and Politics.
I want to talk about what you perceive as them doing right and what you perceive as them perhaps they could do a better job on. And I want to start with what you think they could do a better job on now. What are you seeing right now in terms of the negatives of what this legislative session has been?
I'm seeing a lot of divisive social issues that really don't have anything to do with state government, Roby. In my mind, and I'm kind of a traditional small government guy, an efficiency guy, the real goal of a legislative session ought to be to set a budget in which we spend the dollars as efficiently as possible, and then we provide services that are hopefully, again, as efficient as possible. We ensure efficient state government. I think we've kind of allowed this legislative session to get away from that and go into these divisive social issues that, in my mind, really aren't the purview of state government. So I think that has been the downfall of this legislative session. We've got way too much of this taking from national organizations, model legislation that they won't file in multiple states and filing it in Arkansas when it really doesn't have anything to do with Arkansas. And that has made this overall a very divisive and not as nearly as good a session as it should have been.
Yeah, they're bringing back the old adage that instead of meeting every 2 years for 60 days, they should meet every 60 years for 2 days.
Yeah, I'm all for that. Spider Rowland, the old columnist for the Arkansas Gazette, I think came up with that. 2 days every 60 years.
All right. Let's talk about what's been on the positive front. What have been some things that you have seen move forward that you consider right priorities, good priorities?
Well, I think we've been helped by the fact that we have a very good moderate speaker in Matthew Shepard over on the House side. I mean, I fear to think if one of the bomb-throwing ideologues were the speaker and in the leadership, what we would face. But we've got a moderate pragmatic governor. He's got those who are certainly giving him headaches right now, but we've also got a moderate, pragmatic speaker. Senator Hickey over on the Senate side, I think, has done a good job of leadership also. So that has helped tamp at least a little bit of that down in this session. So I think that's a good thing. I also love the fact that from a budget standpoint, that in using this big flow of federal money that we're going to be getting as a state, that it appears we're putting the focus on that in getting broadband into rural areas of Arkansas. Roby, I have long, going back to my days with the Delta Regional Authority, preached the fact that broadband is to this century for rural America what getting electricity was in the last century into those areas. It's just crucial if we're going to save rural Arkansas. And I've got to tell you, I really love that focus on broadband right now.
All right. It's a little over a year away, the Republican and Democratic primaries of 2022, but we already see some races shaping up. We have right now today Sarah Huckabee versus Leslie Rutledge for the governor's nomination on the Republican side. We see Jan Morgan challenging Senator John Bozeman in a Republican primary for the U.S. Senate. At least she's announced that. If you're a political reporter, which race do you want to cover next year?
Well, obviously, the focus, as it always is going to be on the governor's race in Arkansas and seeing if we continue that pragmatism that we have seen going back over 50 years in Arkansas. So I think that's the big question as we go into next year and we look at the various candidates for governor. On the Senate side, I mean, we saw Jan Morgan, who really represents the far right, what I consider a really dangerous fringe, frankly, of the Arkansas Republican Party, run a race and not do too well against Asa Hutchinson. And I think when all is said and done, that'll probably be the same story in the primary against Senator Bozeman.
Last question for you. Do you think a pragmatist can win a Republican primary in Arkansas in 2022?
You know, I am not quite ready to write off Sarah Huckabee Sanders as being pragmatic, seeing how pragmatic her father was. I know those. There are those who have already branded her. She's just going to be the Trump wing of the party. I'm not ready to write that off. I think we're still, like you said, a year away. There's still a lot to hear, and I'm going to sit back. I'm going to read a lot. I'm going to listen to a lot and see what these candidates say they're going to do for Arkansas. Don't run a race like you're running for the U.S. Senate. This is not a national race. We want to know what you're going to do for the people of Arkansas.
That's Rex Nelson with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, who spoke with Roby Brock on a recent episode of Talk Business and Politics. Remember, you can watch that program each Sunday morning at 10:30 on KFSM Channel 5. And speaking of Channel 5, longtime weatherman and TV personality Garrett Lewis announced this week he is leaving his job as chief meteorologist at the CBS affiliate. His final day is July 30th, wrapping up a run of 20 years with the network. Lewis is 40 years old, and we've got some comments from him about what might be next. You can find that story online at nwabusinessjournal.com. I'm Paul Gatling, and that is today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Until next time, thanks for listening.
This is Ozarks at Large. A lot to keep track of over the last 12 or 13 months. There has, of course, been the pandemic, reckoning with racism and social justice, economic challenges for families and businesses. That's been true globally. That's been true nationally. It's been true here. And KUAF's resources to cover these stories and so many others kept strong by the community of people who recognize the profound importance of an independent news service driven by a public mission. Staying well informed has never been so important to our daily lives, and KUAF has never been more determined to ensure that the indispensable news and information you count on is always here for you. KUAF needs your generous support more than ever in order to serve you. As fierce and unwavering as our commitment and determination are, listener funding is always the critical power source that makes it all possible. Please take action with your contribution right now. You can give a one-time gift or become a sustainer by making monthly contributions at supportkuaf.com. If you give during Ozarks at Large on this Thursday, you're helping match the $1,000 from Joel and Lynn Carver. That $1,000 challenge specific to Ozarks at Large on this Thursday. Make the contribution in the amount of your choosing at supportkuaf.com, and thank you.
91.3 KUAF is supported by Rick's Cafe American. As time goes by, Rick's serves great food and is the place where beautiful relationships begin. Always open in Paris. Additional support is provided by the Overlook Hotel, the perfect spot to retreat from an all-work, no-play lifestyle. Ask about our twin accommodations.
This is Ozarks at Large. After the pandemic began, a new segment began on Ozarks at Large on most Thursdays, Sound Perimeter with Leah Uribe. Leah Uribe is with me via Zoom. The pandemic is still going on, so we can't be in the same room just yet. But Leah, thank you so much for taking time out to talk with me.
Thank you so much, Kyle. It's so great to be here. And, Zoom has been a really good opportunity for all of us to connect. So I'm happy that still, under the circumstances, we are here talking about important things.
Yes. I want to ask you about many things, but first, let's talk about Zoom and being a musician. You've utilized it, I think, as a musician and as a music instructor, have you not?
I have, since, the quick shift with no, we didn't know this was going to happen. We switched immediately to teaching and connecting with our students via Zoom, which is challenging, to say the least. The experience, the way to direct students, we are very tactile, let me look at your reed as a bassoon instructor. Let me see how your posture, let me see this fingering, and everything is very, very close. So, to adapt has been a really interesting process, but it's been, I think we have succeeded. We don't want to be here forever, but we have accomplished a lot.
Sound Perimeter has been with us for about a year. What is your inspiration for what you share with us every Thursday?
Well, Kyle, I come to this community and to this world of classical music with many identities. And I realized a long time ago that many of those identities of mine and people like me are not represented in the world of music, in the world of classical music, in stages, in those, usual platforms, performing, art centers, etc. So I came to Sound Perimeter with the intention of expanding our musical boundaries, basically, really bringing some of the music that has meant a lot to me, both as a professional musician, as a member of a community, as a Colombian person, as a minority professor, as somebody that has explored a lot of other expressions in daily life, because that's who I am. And I feel like it's important to fill into those gaps for others to be able to see themselves in the music that we share with them.
It's interesting because music is audible. So some people, through whatever means, may not realize how uninclusive, if I can make that a word, how uninclusive classical music might have been in their lifetime.
Absolutely. I mean, I am part of that system. I am a product of that system, right? Classical music. And I learned since very early in life to revere, the pieces of the great masters and to learn how to play the masterworks and to be proficient in a world that, revolves around a very specific canon. So while, by no means, I don't want to take away the value of that music has immense power to me too, emotionally, intellectually, otherwise. But at the same time, there are many voices that have been left out for different reasons. It's important to look at the reasons, but it's also very important to be proactive in that change. And if nothing else, my cause is beyond just the artistic and aesthetic experience. But if nothing else, we're leaving so much beauty out of our realm that to enrich our environment and these experiences, those voices are necessary. But there's more to it. there's a very important conversation about social and creative justice that we can have anytime that is as, very important as well.
Well, and part of that is also happening in your podcast, which also has started since the pandemic set down upon us.
That's right. And you're talking about Reflections, yes. Music series. which is a very, very beautiful project, very dear to my heart and the heart of the members of my team. We got a chancellor's grant back in the end of 2019 with this idea of ours just to bring some diversity. That was the initial intention. And it was very much focused around Latin American music, you know, given that many of us in the team are from Latin America. But of course, the pandemic happened and George Floyd murder happened. And we needed to shift our intentions, our plans, and really use the power that music has to equalize, to challenge these structures, to bring those other voices, to bring conversation. So that's what we do with Reflection. So the podcast is a component of it. We also bring musicians to the forefront of the activity to teach in the music department. Those musicians that we bring to participate in the podcast, in the conversations, in the master classes, are citizen artists. And we're looking for people that are committed to excellence in music, but at the same time that are moving, you know, their communities and change and bring a message of advocacy. So we want to learn from them. We want to partner with them. We want for them to hear what we're doing in our own community. And we want to kind of expand this interaction and create a network of people because, you know, the pandemic has brought, of course, desolation to our arts and culture, right? Music is not happening the way it used to be. Our fellow musicians are suffering. They're not having jobs. There's a lot of healing that is needed that usually the arts, you know, and music provides that healing, but now it's not happening. So how to rechannel what we do, heal our communities, these conversations about racial inequities and injustices and everything else, that's a dynamic of society that needs to be healed as well. And we're looking with these conversations, with these activities also to delve into that. We're also, you know, bringing through the podcast and Reflections, you know, the intention of create some pipeline leadership. I think we need more people that look like me, sound like me, you know, from diverse communities to come and take these roles and understand that being a musician and being an artist and that voice needs to be strong and needs to lead new initiatives in order to transform these dynamics that have been, you know, quite small and to the privilege. We want to, music is for all.
Music. We know anyone who listens to music knows it can be healing. It can provide a place of solace. Can it also, especially for people who have been marginalized or ignored or underrepresented, can it give a sense of advocacy and power?
I think so. And actually, you know, I am more interested in that power of music, right? I mean, I'm all about going, you know, to the concert after a really hard day at work and forgetting about life. But really, I think it's a thought for us in this world of the arts, as arts administrators as well, to know that power that we have the platform, we have the stage. And if we uplift those communities that have not been represented, we're giving them a voice. We are rebalancing, right? And all of these situations in society, I mean, let's talk about the shooting a couple of weeks ago, the Asian community suffering, the murder of George Floyd. And that responsibility, we have to connect with those communities in the power that we have. Let's get their music. Let's get them to present what is important to them. Let's put them at the forefront. Even more so, let's give a space because this space has been occupied by the same type of people all the time, right? In classical music, it's all about the Eurocentric model and music written by the dead white composers. Again, that's beautiful, but there's more. We have the platform to uplift these communities and to be proactive in their, you know, being part of the in our communities or to our communities in a more balanced way. And of course, for them as well, when you feel yourself, this is an interesting conversation, Kyle, because as a woman, for example, it took me years and years and years, I've been playing bassoon for a long time, to find a woman composer that wrote a piece for bassoon. It's not because they were not there. But in my mind, in our minds, you know, we were led to believe that music was not good enough. So we as women, and add to that, identity, many others, immigrant, minority, and other, whatever that is, right? We feel less because we don't see ourselves in these stages. So we are led to think all the time that there's something intrinsically less about us or wrong about us, that we have to always look up to the others that are in the center, in the spotlight. So absolutely, that's what we do with music. We empower people and we empower communities And we hopefully are creating and disrupting these to create more balance.
And what I love also about this is the reemphasis that classical music is contemporary. It's not just those composers who lived 200 or 300 years ago. It's being created now and in the very recent past.
Absolutely. And that's in the other world to discover. You know, I mean, we need to communicate with people with the living, right? That want to see their own situations being represented on a stage. And that's the other power of the arts. You know, we see life reflected back to us. And sometimes words are not needed to really understand the impact of situations, societal changes, political structures, right? Everything is right there in the music. But if we are set up in this, you know, old frame of the masterworks, we become versed in those dynamics from 200 years ago or 400 years ago or 50. But what about today, right? And those voices that are speaking our truth and our experiences. So that's also super important to open our spaces to music that is being created recently and to connect with those voices and also feel that much more real representation, I think.
Do you and your colleagues who might be traditionally underrepresented in classical music still feel pushback against exploring the non-white composer world?
I do. Some of my colleagues do. The system, you know, this is a conversation about the structures and systems that need to be challenged. We can change all we want in our, you know, my own environment is the music department at the University of Arkansas. At the same time, I am educating my bassoonists, my students, to be able to go and audition to be a principal bassoon in a major orchestra. And if that orchestra doesn't change the audition list, then I am misleading my student, right? You know, opening spaces for something that is not going to make them successful in the system. So this fight and this conversation has many fronts, and we try to cover many of them. But of course, from that very, you know, line of thought, some of us are, you know, it's hard to keep that advocacy because we don't know if we are going to be successful with this fight. So it's a balance. And that conversation that needs to be normalized at every level. I had a really good meeting today with a colleague from Juilliard. And of course, whatever Juilliard says or does, we're going to follow. They are the main institution in music or one of the, you know, top institutions in music. And I think that's what we need to do. I believe in the power of community, and my advocacy has been very much centered in my community because I think that this is my closest, more effective, you know, way to use my time and my words and my voice. But at the same time, those connections are important. So we find that support and we can move this at a faster speed.
This has been such a tough 13 or 14 months for musicians and patrons alike. But soon you'll be performing in the atrium at Walton Arts Center along with some other musicians. Tell me about that.
I am. This is an interesting, you know, event, Kyle. Sona has been collaborating with the Walton Arts Center, both organizations that are dear to my heart that I have worked with in different capacities for a long time. And this pandemic brought to me really silence with my bassoon, not only because all concerts were canceled, but because my mind was in a different place. In our routine of preparing music for some, you know, upcoming, you know, engagement. That's how we work, and I didn't have anything to work for. So it's my coming back. There's a piece in the program by our local composer, Catherine Murdoch. It's called Swan Song. And I presented that a few weeks ago in an episode of Oscast, mm-hmm. This really cool project that has been going on in the area. And the Swan Song was a piece that a clarinetist from Wichita State commissioned to Catherine for his retirement, based on this idea that he's ending and he's starting something, you know, the most beautiful song before you die, right? Or maybe not, because maybe the opportunity of transitioning and bridging into something else. And that piece will be in the program at the atrium. And it represents exactly what has been this pandemic for me as a musician. Lots of silence, lots of reflection, lots of redirecting my energy as a performing artist as well. I think it's important for me to be very proactive in the selection of my repertoire. I have always been that way, but I want to really emphasize that advocacy. This program is all centered about minority composers. a lot of Latin American composers, women composers, new music. So I'm super thrilled that I have a group of colleagues, Miroslava Panayotova in the piano, Fernando Valencia and Matt Bruska in the percussion. We have been playing together for a long time and we are all connect in that idea of bringing important and marginalized music to the forefront. So that's what we're going to be doing on April 18th at 2 p.m.
Thank you so much for a year of Sound Perimeter. Thank you for everything you've done to help expand our boundaries of music. I look forward to a collaboration that lasts, well, until we have our own swan songs.
Thank you, Kyle. Likewise, it's been very important for me to connect with KUAF and to have your support and to feel that acceptance that my voice is welcomed with my accent and my our identities and my everything that is mine, to be able to share it in a public space. So I appreciate everything KUAF does for my communities, for our community, for, to really, you're at the forefront of this conversation as well of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I owe a lot to KUAF for the many steps we are moving forward.
We'll keep taking those steps. Leah Uribe, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Kyle.
High school seniors are making big college decisions amid a whole lot of unknowns.
I want to know if living on campus right now is worth the risk.
It's going to be so much harder and doing this all online.
How do I know I'm making the right decision of my next 4 years?
What am I not going to be expecting?
Current college students take on their questions this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered this afternoon from 3 to 6 on 91.3 KUAF. This is your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a radio station devoted to this region. Antoinette Grajeda's newscast every weekday morning at 5:30 and 7:30 to keep you up to date on the latest news from the legislature and regarding COVID-19 in Arkansas. Pete Hartman has the community spotlight every weekday morning at 6:30 and 8:30 to keep you up to date with what area nonprofits are doing in an effort to make this a better place to live. And of course, we have Ozarks at Large, twice a day, Monday through Friday, and Sunday mornings at 9. And public service announcements, and new podcasts, and local music programming throughout the weekend. If you appreciate the commitment to local and regional coverage, as well as the commitment to keeping you and people who live near you informed about what's happening at state legislature, in Washington, D.C., and around the world, please remember, this is not inexpensive radio. It costs us money to pay the people who bring you the news, to pay for the programs that originate from around the world. If you appreciate that commitment and you understand that you and listeners like you are the biggest part of the budget that helps pay for these programs, we would love for you to make a contribution right now at supportkuaf.com. It's in the amount of your choosing. You also have a variety of methods to choose from as well. And if you contribute during Ozarks at Large this Thursday, you're helping us meet a challenge, a $1,000 challenge from Joel and Lynn Carver of Springdale. We'd love to have $2,000 more for KUAF at the end of Ozarks at Large. You can help us get there by going to supportkuaf.com, and thank you.
91.3 KUAF, supported by Oceanic Airlines, the airline that helps travelers to destinations with no satisfying conclusions. Oceanic Airlines can help you get lost. Additional support is provided by Stark Industries. Stark Industries provides iron and more to avenging companies and is a captain of American values.
This is 91.3 KUAF Fayetteville, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Contributors today include Jacqueline Froelich, Daniel Carruth, and Leah Uribe. Thanks to Stephanie Brock and the crew at Talk Business and Politics for this week's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Timothy Dennis produced our show. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thank you so much for listening. You can always go to supportkuaf.com, and thank you.